You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagmann. It's the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour for today, Tuesday, December 4th, 2018. It's day number 684 of the Donald J. Trump presidency and 567 days of obstruction by the Mueller probe, the deep state swamp response to the Donald J. Trump presidency, day number 567. And I want to thank everyone who sent me emails with respect to my question. Yesterday, I took a deep dive into Uranium One, at least the introduction of Uranium One as it applies to what's going on today. And got a lot of responses. I want to thank everyone who sent an email saying, yeah, continue with this. To a person, it was, yes, continue with the investigation at that level. And, you know, I just want to say that that's a testament, I believe, to the intellectual acumen of my listeners. And thank you so very much for not just responding, but for understanding the bigger picture here. Because what we're seeing right now, I believe, we are seeing some things take place. And I'm going to point to, before I get back into Uranium One, because you need to hear this story. And again, if you missed yesterday, you might want to go back and download that episode to listen to the introduction. It lays out kind of the beginning, so to speak. I'm going to go over some of that today. But Uranium One is, to me, looking at everything that's going on. Rather than number them, let's look at events that are taking place that seem to be moving the ball forward to expose, but not just expose, but to perhaps prepare the United States, the citizens, for the knowledge or for the actions that are in the offing. In other words, the actions to bring justice to those individuals in the government, whether it be the FBI, the Department of Justice, or even former presidents, whether legitimate or not, if you understand what I mean there, and people around, and presidential candidates and people around them, I think justice is closing in, and there are some things happening behind the scenes. And we can see that by a number of different seemingly disparate events. All right. Now, it was this past week. Oh, by the way, Dan Bongino had said yesterday, you know, be sure to tune in to the Sean Hannity program at 9 o'clock. Well, I looked at the rebroadcast at 1 o'clock this morning on the East Coast time, and well, I'll tell you what, it was nonstop coverage of the death of Bush 41, all right? So, scheduled to be on last night, interestingly enough, you remember the raid that took place on November 19th by 16 FBI agents who obtained a court order that was signed 4 days earlier by Federal Magistrate Stephanie Gallagher in the U.S. District for Baltimore. The raid involved, in the event you missed this, Nate Cain, N-A-T-E-C-A-I-N, Nate Cain, or Dennis Nathan Cain, that's his legal name. He's a whistleblower, but not just any whistleblower. In fact, he's on Twitter. You can follow his tweets at Cain, C-A-I-N underscore Nate. All right. And the reason I bring this up is because I've been watching his Twitter feed, and not just his latest Twitter feed, but going all the way back to October of 2018, Now, who is this Nathan Cain of who you speak, of which you speak? Well, again, there was a raid that took place by 16 FBI agents against a whistleblower, Nate Cain, on November 19th, based on a warrant signed by Federal Magistrate Stephanie Gallagher on November 15th. Now, Kane, who really is, as Jeff Carlson points out, from Markets Watch. And by the way, I want to make sure I give credit to everyone. I'm not claiming any of this information is my own information, at least until I get into the research I've done personally. So this was a piece by Jeff Carlson. But Kane notes that, Carlson notes that Kane, whose name is new to the public, is not just any whistleblower. He does retain a top-level security clearance and maintains a number of security-related credentials. Now, that's based on a resume that has been deleted online. His Twitter account is merely husband, father, U.S. Army vet, cybersecurity expert, federal whistleblower. I love my God, my country, and my family. I am a patriot. Ah, okay, there you have it. That's his own description on Twitter. But, again, he retains his top-level security clearance, maintains a number of security-related credentials. His specialties, and I found this very important, his specialties include the FISA Amendment Act. Where have we heard this before? Well, that's the basis of Spygate, basically, and the abuse therein, or thereof. Section 702 and the various minimization procedures and signals intelligence authorities. So what does this all mean? All right. Well, or what happened on November 19th? Leading up to November 19th, that raid, Kane privately delivered documents pertaining to the Clinton Foundation and Uranium One. Important. This is why I'm saying this is one of the big issues that could very well tank Mueller and many people, including but not limited to Mueller himself, the Clinton Foundation, Hillary Clinton, and a number of others, because this is a big deal. Peter Schweitzer in Clinton Cash had really explained it well. It's not an easy read. I mean, it's not a, you know, something you take to the beach and read. This is something you sit down and you take notes and you read. And you I'm going to tell you, there's a lot to Uranium One, and to understand Uranium One, or to understand what's going on today, you should understand Uranium One. All right, but Kane privately delivered documents pertaining to the Clinton Foundation and Uranium One to a government watchdog. This, according to Kane's attorney, and Kane's attorney, where is it here? It's Sakaris, I believe it is his name, his last name. Anyway, the Justice Department's Inspector General, and we're talking about Horowitz here, was informed that the documents show that the federal officials failed to investigate potential criminal activity regarding Hillary Clinton, as in her capacity as former Secretary of State, the Clinton Foundation, and Rosatom. And Rosatom is the Russian company that purchased Uranium One. Okay? Now, I want to repeat this, because this is a critical, vital piece of information that everyone is complaining about. We all are complaining about the lack of justice, and hey, look what's happening right under our noses. Now, on my personal Twitter feed, as an aside, I had a pinned tweet, which I unpinned. It's floating around there somewhere, with side-by-side pictures of Hillary Clinton and Ethel Rosenberg. Remember, the Rosenbergs were executed for selling atomic secrets to then-Soviet Union. At that time, treason, espionage, they received the death penalty. And I see some parallels here. This is in my view, in my research, I see some parallels here. But moving on, just to repeat that statement here. The Justice Department, their Inspector General, was informed that the documents show, now these are the documents that were turned over by Kane, The documents show that the federal officials failed to investigate potential criminal activity regarding former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, and Rosatom. And Rosatom, again, is the Russian company that purchased Uranium One. And if you're at home, you know, if you want to take notes, great. And I intend to do my best, level best, to get some reports out on this, but written reports out on this. But think about this. Who would have been in charge of investigating the Clinton Foundation and Hillary Clinton in the activities with respect to Uranium One? Why, none other than the current special counsel, Robert Mueller, as head of the FBI at that time. Mueller is a witness. Actually, he's more than that. He's not only just a witness. He could very well be a co-conspirator, in my view, in the attempt to cover up the potential espionage, potential treason, potential sale of uranium, an actual transfer of uranium via Uranium One to Russia. You know, the Uranium One scandal that the left says does not exist. Mueller is in charge of, he's the special counsel. Now do you see why it was so important to have Mueller in that position? Because he controls all of that information at this moment. Well, the Mueller, Sessions, Rosenstein cabal or triangle did. Now Whitaker has Jeff Sessions' absence, in his resignation or firing, however you want to look at it. Now it's Whitaker who is actually overseeing the Mueller investigation. And Whitaker is the one that is now looking at all of this. Now, Kane obtained official whistleblower status from the Department of Justice Inspector General Michael Horowitz. Michael Sicaris, that's Kane's attorney. Forgive me if I had mispronounced his name or screwed up his name. Admitted that Kane had met with a senior member of Horowitz's office and delivered a flash drive along with a sealed envelope containing documents. The same materials reportedly were also delivered to the Senate and House Intelligence Committees. Now, understand this. The Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, just if you remember nothing else, Mark Warner, the individuals that comprise this committee, in my view, one of the most corrupt committees in government. That's worthy of a show by itself. But the FBI seized all of the original documents in Kane's possession. This according to Kane's attorney, Sicaris. Now, one of the documents reportedly was or showed that Mueller, as FBI director in that capacity, failed to investigate allegations of criminal misconduct pertaining to Rosatom and to other government entities attached to Uranium One. Now think about that allegation. And now think about the November 19 raid against Kane. Okay, so, and Dan Bongino had spoken about this yesterday, I believe it was, or Friday, I'm not sure which, on his program. You know, why would the FBI raid Kane's residence if he's a cooperating whistleblower? Why would they raid his residence? Kane does not appear, when you look at his timeline on Twitter and his, at least his public remarks, I don't want to say he's not bothered by it, but there's something else here. And there's something else that I'll just give you the bottom line. It would appear favorable for us, meaning the Patriots, the Patriot community. Now, I again, you're a whistleblower cooperating with the Inspector General. You've got information that Tanks Mueller and 16 FBI agents show up at your door. You might tend to be a little bit, you know, angry. Well, it appears that there's something more going on here. Which leads me, oh, and he was supposed to be on Fox, on with Sean Hannity yesterday, last night. Which is why Dan Bongino, of course, who talks to Sarah Carter and John Solomon and Sean Hannity, said make sure you DVR Sean Hannity last night. But isn't it interesting that a tweet from Nate Kane yesterday, sometime around 7 o'clock yesterday evening, now he writes this on Twitter. Friends, I have been contacted by Fox News and informed that due to H.W. Bush's funeral, many segments, including mine, have been canceled for tonight. I'll update you when I know more. Okay, that was yesterday, sometime like around 7 o'clock in the evening Eastern time, a couple of hours before showtime for Sean Hannity. Okay, all right, so he was bumped because of the H.W. Bush funeral coverage. I'm not going to say any more about that. All right. Now, a couple more. There was one additional tweet, I should say. Not a couple more, but one additional tweet that he sent out. And again, Twitter is interesting. If you, you just got to look at the information on Twitter that people put out. And it's pretty telling sometimes, and it's pretty interesting. It was just a few hours after that, Nate Kane tweeted this out. Don't lose hope. Pray, call on God to intervene. Remember Ephesians 6:12, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against all the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Okay, well, it's actually a retweet by Michael Caine. This was a retweet of Judicial Watch from December 1st. Judicial Watch filed its FOIA lawsuit with the Department of Justice for any and all records or of communications involving any investigation by the FBI into the Clinton Foundation and for information on the Obama Department of Justice efforts to shut down the investigation down. Now, he retweeted that. Okay. Pay attention to the picture that he is attempting to provide, and understand this. And he even admitted as such on the same day, where he wrote that, look, I know you have a lot of questions or many questions. Please understand, for legal reasons, I can't comment about the content of what I provided more than what is already out there. And that's when he said he's going to be on with Sean Hannity on Monday, yesterday at 9 p.m. with his attorney to tell a story. And of course, again, bumped because of the coverage of the funeral for George H.W. Bush. And look, I know people out there saying, well, boy, you know, the timing is suspicious and such. Well, sometimes things just happen, and I'm not big on I do believe you can exploit or you can manage the funeral plans, but let's, at this point, I'm not willing to go beyond that. For example, you know, let's say Joe Smith is scheduled to testify on Friday. Well, the funeral is being planned for Friday. They could have planned it for Thursday. They could have planned it for another day, but they decided to plan it for Friday. In that fashion, the funeral itself, the arrangements can be made to inconvenience, to upset, subjugate other plans taking place. But beyond that, yeah, I'm not willing to go beyond that. So I'm just saying that, you know, don't go too far out in the weeds, because sometimes, again, things are just the way they are. And yes, you know, it's do you believe, you know, nothing is coincidence? Don't believe in, you know, do you actually believe in coincidences? Well, sometimes things just happen. All right. And again, you know, boy, it's a really odd time for George H.W. Bush to die. Well, sometimes, while you may not be able to control that, you can certainly can control the arrangements to inconvenience the truth from getting out and then dominate the news cycle. That's what I think happened. And anything beyond that, I think, is just a little bit nonsensical. All right. So I wanted to make sure that I covered that, because this all, again, this the bottom line here, you're looking at things going on behind the scenes, and we're all impatient. We all want to see justice happen yesterday. We all want things to get going. We you know, people are starting to lose hope and say, oh, Donald Trump is not doing enough. Well, he's, when you look at things, wait a minute. Yeah, things are going on behind the scenes. In the article that Jeff Carlson wrote from Markets Watch, and I believe it was picked up on Epoch Times, or he wrote it for Epoch Times, he also gets into a couple of other things. The title of the article, by the way, is Four Investigations Share a Common Thread. And it's a pretty critical article, a pretty vital article. I'll put it in the show notes for you to take a look at. And again, it's old, relatively old in terms of news cycles. I mean, a couple of days old. But it's still relevant. And he points out, I mean, the bottom line on this is he points out that, well, his first sentence, if anyone tells you they're tired of nothing happening with regard to ongoing investigations, perhaps they should take a closer look at a number of events that came to light over the past few days. That basically sums up this article. And he mentions the raid against Kane, or on Kane, and the interesting, well, the interesting aspects of that. But he also, the article also mentions, again, Rosatom, Clinton Foundation, Clinton, and Robert Mueller. So it looks like some things are coming out and some things are moving forward. Now, oh, you know what? I should probably, okay. Carlson continues with the Kane raid by saying, or by writing, that there have been strong reactions to the news, with many perceiving it as some sort of cover-up. However, a few facts are worth entertaining. Regardless of the FBI's seizure, both Horowitz and the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, they've already got the documents in their possession. Now, stop right there, and this, let me throw this in. Or do they? Okay, the FBI's seizure of documents from Kane doesn't indicate the documents are being hidden, which addresses my editorial comment there. As noted, FBI agents obtained a court order, which means their identities are known. FBI Director Chris Wray, if he doesn't already know, could easily determine the agents' identities. This was not a clandestine operation. You don't send 16 FBI agents to somebody's house and with a warrant. And as Jeff, Dan Bongino pointed out too, and people sometimes, look, you get a warrant. And I've seen this on my own personal experience in serving or going along. I should have, not law enforcement, but working with law enforcement. I've been in positions where warrants were executed, search warrants were executed, and as a operational asset for the FBI and the Department of Justice, I've been on a number of warrant executions of search warrants, and Dan Bongino had rightly pointed this out. This is something you don't hide. In other words, when you get a warrant, a search warrant, it's very, very specific. And I remember one time, just as an aside, we received, or the police department, or the FBI, I should say, received a warrant for a person's house and garage. But what the warrant did not include was the individual's vehicle, which was a big mistake, especially on my part, given my situation working as an operational asset, because that was me. That was all on me. Never thinking that it was possible that the material or the items, and I'm not going to get into the case because this is kind of just as an aside, were small enough that could have, well, they were in the car. And I remember to this day, and this is back in 97, 98, I remember to this day the FBI executing this search warrant, and the subject of the search warrant big smile, looked at the warrant, and said, "Have at it, guys." Got in his car and drove away with the items that we were looking for, named in the search warrant or the predicate for the search warrant. He drove away with them, and there was not a damn thing that could be done. And I remember that feeling. But anyway, but the other side of that, now this according to Dan Bongino and in my personal experience as well, there's also an inventory sheet that you must fill out, a warrant return. In other words, this is the warrant and this is what we found. So an inventory sheet of items taken during the execution of a search warrant. And it only makes sense. So this is not something that you would hide. This is not something that you covertly do. All right. So there are, and I said all of that to say this, it does appear with this case, the raid and such, that the focus, the bottom line focus here, is on Clinton and the Clinton Foundation and Mueller as well. And from what I've heard and read, there are a lot of people inside the Beltway in the swamp that aren't having a very good week and haven't been having good days here since, over the last couple of weeks. Take it for what it's worth. So I hope that made sense. And you can read the piece by Jeff Carlson. It also ties together a raid in Chicago. And that occurred on November 29th. I'll briefly mention this. On November 29th, federal agents raided the offices of Alderman Edward Burke, a very powerful Chicago politician who has held his position in Chicago politics for 50 years. And Burke, who was under federal investigation or scrutiny on several occasions, he's never been convicted or indicted. He's like the Teflon Don, so to speak. His investigation is being handled by the Public Corruption Squad from the local FBI office, the Chicago FBI office. And Burke, his law firm specializes in property tax reductions for his clients. So while some on the left, and this, I'm paraphrasing Carlson here, where some on the left said that, whoa, this is bad news for President Trump because Burke's law firm specializes in property tax reductions for his clients. Well, this could be connected to the work that Burke's law firm maybe did for President Trump, but not so much. And there are a lot of reasons for that, not the least of which the raid was not originated from the special counsel. This was a local thing. And or when I say local, I'm talking about a different part of the FBI. In other words, there's nothing to suggest that this raid has anything to do with the special counsel. But it could overlap, okay, because Burke's, well, he's got a huge role in local Democratic judge making. In the Burke investigation, this guy, this alderman, raided November 29th. This investigation was being conducted in conjunction with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Chicago, not Mueller's office. And the raids were in response to new allegations. And again, his role in local Democratic judgment-making process. So the investigation probably has more to do with corrupt Chicago politics than anything related to the president. So what is that kind of telling you? Okay, when you're working one investigation and you've got a known subject, the subject of previous investigations, just think of it this way. Where's Burke from? Where's his base of operation? Chicago. This is more, in my view, more foreboding to the Obama-Clinton criminal cabal than could ever be to President Donald Trump. So just think about this. And then he gets into the investigations about big banks, Deutsche Bank and other banks, Danske Bank and such. The article, you can read it. You can read it. But there are things that are happening behind the scenes. And there do appear to be common thread, or at least one common thread, among what might appear to be unrelated events. You know, we started talking about the raid on Kane, the raid on Chicago, a politician Burke, the investigation of European banks, big banks, laundering money, and the charges brought against a Clinton donor. And I didn't mention that, but all of these activities targeted were either occurring during the Obama era, or in the case of the Department of Justice whistleblower, were directly related to the underlying events at that time. And his final sentence, Carlson's final sentence in his article, he writes that there may be more going on than meets the casual eye. And I agree with that. Looking at all of this now and seeing the change in tone and tenor over the last couple of weeks, I can see where, at least in my view, the White Hats, perhaps under the direction of Donald Trump, are moving forward. And yes, it looks bad for the Clintons. It looks bad for the Clinton Foundation. And of all people out there, of all citizen investigative journalists and citizen investigators, whatever you'd like to, however you want to classify them, Charles Ortel has been at the forefront of exposing the crimes of the Clinton Foundation. And we've had him on our flagship show. So when you look at this, again, from a cruising altitude level, man, there's a lot of stuff that is going on, and it does not bode well, at least in my opinion, for the deep state. Now, yesterday, okay, so hopefully that made sense. I don't have an ombudsman like Dan Bongino, so I rely upon you to tell me if it makes sense. But yesterday I was mentioning Uranium One, and I believe at the epicenter of what's taking place right now is Uranium One. And please, if you have a chance, go back and listen to that episode if you so desire. Some good books on Uranium One that expose many elements of Uranium One include, but are not limited to, Clinton Cash by Peter Schweitzer, Compromised by Seamus Bruner, with a foreword by Peter Schweitzer, just to name two. But as I had talked about yesterday, Uranium One, what is Uranium One? I mean, you know what it is, but do your liberal or progressive or insane family members and friends, do they understand what Uranium One is? Because many people out there, of course, will say, well, this is the Uranium One scandal. It's been debunked as fake news. But there's so much evidence to suggest that Uranium One is one of those crimes that involves almost all of the current players right now, and overlapping into the FISA abuse, that scandal or crime, and many other, and the laundering of money. This is kind of a key to what's going on. Information right now is being forced into the open by this program and a few others. The most damning right now, the most damning information about Uranium One, at least in terms of recent information, has been by a confidential informant by the name of William Douglas Campbell. And I don't want to get too far down the road here without getting back to the kind of a continuation of yesterday. But William Douglas Campbell, of course, is a whistleblower, a confidential informant represented by Victoria Tensing, who has been ignored for a while, and now he's not being ignored anymore. So you've got this whistleblower, this confidential informant, talking about Uranium One, and therein lies perhaps some of the most damning evidence. In fact, he's an FBI informant who possesses video and audio evidence and documentation to support allegations of the use of positions of power and influence to sell one of our nation's most important natural resources to to an enemy of the United States, and the abuse of power to cover it up. And again, where does this abuse go to? Abuse of power? It goes back to Robert Mueller, and to a lesser extent, Comey, on the periphery, but many of the same players in there today. And Uranium One, in a nutshell, is not a scandal, but a potential crime against the United States. But it's not just one crime. It's many overlapping crimes. It not only involves the Clintons, but many others who potentially conspired to use their positions of power and influence and to facilitate one of the most egregious crimes against our country, and others assisting in covering it up. All right, it begins, just kind of a recap here. Go back to September of 2005. You have former U.S. President Bill Clinton and Canadian billionaire Frank Giustra. They appear together in Kazakhstan. All right, now the stated purpose of their trip, I've got my notes here. Yeah, I've got so many notes. If you look at my desk, again, I look like some college freshman going through or preparing for a final exam. But the alleged purpose of their trip to Kazakhstan was humanitarian in nature, where they were to help the HIV and AIDS patients gain access to certain drug therapies. Well, there's a problem with that, because Kazakhstan, a nation of 15.4 million people, they don't have an AIDS problem or an HIV problem. In fact, only about 1,500 people out of 15.4 million even needed such treatment. But what Kazakhstan does have are rich natural resources estimated at $5 trillion. And the biggest is uranium. Now, this trip was organized in part by someone by the name of Sergei Kurzin, who once worked for the former federal fugitive Mark Rich. Remember Mark Rich? He was the guy pardoned at the 11th hour, well, on the last day, by William Jefferson Clinton. Mark Rich. So, again, they were in Kazakhstan, under the auspices of HIV, humanitarian stuff. Well, that's BS. You can see that. Let me just tell you again. A nation of 15.4 million people, yeah, only about 1,500 needed the treatment that they were there for. Yeah, that's humanitarian. Now, that's a cover story. But conversely, or alternatively, Kazakhstan, rich in natural resources, $5 trillion, uranium being the big resource there. In that trip, arranged by a guy by the name of Sergei Kurzin, who once worked for Mark Rich. So you see how things kind of, you can't look at this in a vacuum or one event and without looking at many events. And I'll tell you, people in the citizen investigators, for example, Charles Ortel's great at this. Dan Bongino, fantastic at this. Tracy Beans, just absolutely incredibly talented at this. These are the people, really, in my view, that have the... And there are many more. And I apologize for not naming them all. I just couldn't possibly do it. But you see what I'm talking about. But the Giustra-Clinton partnership started, at least began in public back in 2005. Through the establishment of the Clinton-Giustra Sustainable Growth Initiative. Clinton and Giustra have a very rich history as well that predates the 2005. It goes back to Arkansas. All right. But anyway, on September 7th of 2005, Hillary Clinton, the former senator from New York and then member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, she threatened to withhold aid to Kazakhstan unless and until there was a Eurasia mining deal went forward amid political bureaucracy inside Kazakhstan. And, well, you can see from the Armed Services Committee, Clinton, even as a senator, Hillary Clinton was doing things to cash in for the Clinton Foundation, and also setting the stage for what is really known, or for what really became Uranium One, even back in 05 and 07. Now, I'm not going to get too far down into the details back then, because that would take multiple programs to go through. But it's interesting because Frank Giustra, his Eurasia Energy Limited company, was awarded mining rights in Kazakhstan from the Atomic Energy Agency for that country. And all of a sudden, Eurasia, which is Giustra's company, became the world's largest uranium mining producer. These are just highlights that you can remember as we get into Uranium One. And again, this is kind of an overflow, a natural progression from yesterday's program. And I sense that this is going to be covered by multiple programs, because this is not just a simple, crime scene. So Frank Giustra, after being awarded or suddenly becoming the world's largest uranium mining producer, he suddenly donates $31.3 million to the Clinton Foundation. And back in August of 06, FBI Director Mueller, yes, Mueller, in conjunction with the CIA, and who was in the CIA back then? Well, they reportedly began an investigation into uranium smuggling corruption from the former Soviet republics. Okay, what do you do? If you're spearheading an investigation, you can grab someone by their hand and walk them down a certain path, and you can coordinate the investigation away from the real parties. Okay, now it was in February of 07 when the head of Kazakhstan's Atomic Energy Committee or Department met with Bill Clinton in Chappaqua to work out a new business deal with Frank Giustra. And again, this is 2007. What is this now? 11 years ago? 11 plus years ago. It was also at that time Uranium One bought Giustra's company Eurasia for $3.1 billion. This was not a typical purchase, but a reverse merger, because Giustra and his associates maintained a 60% controlling interest in Eurasia Limited. Giustra and associates announced this reoccurring commitment to donate, now just, because they're humanitarians, donate $100 million and half of the future profits to the Clinton Foundation. This would ultimately result in an estimated $145 million in contributions to the Clinton Foundation. Do you see why Uranium One is so critical in all of this? And Mueller, okay, it goes far beyond just holding up a little bit of highly enriched uranium on the tarmac. No, this goes far beyond. Listen to the money that's being made and transferred in selling out our assets. Very treasonous, in my view. But Uranium One, back in June of 07, after that groundwork was laid, they began to purchase U.S. mines. And they acquired sites in multiple states in the United States, including Wyoming, which, by the way, represents 20% of U.S. mining or uranium deposits. Think about that. Uranium One, again, after the groundwork was laid, they started purchasing multiple sites in the United States, mining sites, including Wyoming, and 20% of the uranium deposits. The Wyoming counts for 20% of the uranium deposits in the United States. In August of 08, then FBI Director Robert Mueller was notified of alleged corruption and bribery involving a Uranium One and Rosatom State Atomic Energy Corporation deal in Wyoming, as well as elsewhere. Mueller was told about this. And the bottom line is, he not only did nothing, he deflected the investigation away from Clinton and the entire Uranium One scandal. That's your man as a special counsel. This is why he was selected as special counsel, so he can control the investigations just like he did with Uranium One. Good boy. Good boy. Sit. Lay down. Roll over. And then back in, well, January 20th of 2009, of course, Barack Hussein Obama hijacked the Oval Office. And 9 days later, Hillary Diane Rodham, the Yak Clinton, becomes Secretary of State. Oh, yeah, and let's not forget, let's make it complete, because another, what, 4 or 5 days later, February 3rd, Eric Holder becomes U.S. Attorney General. Well, now it's complete. The FBI, Mueller, Hussein in the White House, Clinton in the State Department, Holder as U.S. Attorney General. We got it now. We got it covered now. Well, in June of 2009, some, 6 months after Hussein sat, was in the Oval Office, and a couple months after Hillary Clinton sworn in as Secretary of State and Holder sworn in as Attorney General, Rosatom, which is the Russian State Atomic Energy Corporation, established back in 2007, 2 years prior. Rosatom is the regulatory body for the of the Russian nuclear complex. Rosatom and Russia, I mean, interchangeable. It's the body that controls the Russian nuclear arsenal. Guess what they did? They secured a 17% ownership stake in Uranium One, marking the beginning of a very aggressive campaign to control our U.S. uranium market. All right. And as a matter of fact, Rosatom also built the nuclear reactors in Iran, including the Bushehr nuclear reactor. And so they've been supplying Iran with uranium. Okay. Now, in June of 2009, the Kazakhstan government arrests the head of the Kazakhstan nuclear department, and the head of the nuclear department, I cannot pronounce his name, Mukhtar somebody, all right, on charges that related to Uranium One, on charges of corruption. This is the guy, by the way, who attended a dinner party at Chappaqua at Clinton's house. But the reason he was the reason he was arrested, Putin wanted the uranium in Kazakhstan and put pressure on Kazakhstan's dictator to keep his hands off of the uranium, which prompted this guy's arrest and jeopardized the sale of Kazakhstan's uranium to Rosatom. I know this is kind of complicated, but hopefully you're following me on this. Well, the Clinton State Department intervened. Hillary Clinton used her position to threaten to withhold financial aid to Kazakhstan, which resulted in the Rosatom purchase to proceed. In other words, you're not going to stop us. And if you try to, Clinton, here's Clinton, you're not going to stop us. And if you try to, well, we're going to just withhold aid and do all sorts of things to make this deal proceed. Now, on June 12th of 2009, Rod Rosenstein, the U.S. Attorney for Maryland, supposedly began an investigation into bribery and corruption regarding Uranium One and the Rosatom deals. Jeez, Rod Rosenstein. Now, it's important and relevant to note, I mentioned before William Douglas Campbell as an FBI informant, who was outed by U.S. intelligence and whose name was provided to the media back last November, a year ago now. But the reason for Rosenstein, the reason for his involvement is simple, and it relates to the existence of the government whistleblower, and I'm talking about William Campbell at this point, the Russian commercial agent responsible for the sale and transportation of uranium from disassembled nuclear warheads. Remember yesterday I spoke about megatons to megawatts? Well, the the commercial agent responsible for the sale and transportation of uranium from these disassembled nuclear warheads from Russia to the U.S., that company is Tenex, T-E-N-E-X, which is a subsidiary of Rosatom. Now, the U.S. arm of Tenex is known as Tenam USA. Where are they based? Bethesda, Maryland. And who heads Tenam USA? That's based in Bethesda. But a guy by the name of Vadim Mikurin. Now, Mikurin was responsible for managing Rosatom and Tenex contracts with U.S. uranium purchasers, which gave him leverage over U.S. companies. And he used this leverage to extort and defraud U.S. contractors into paying highly inflated prices for uranium. And this enriched the Kremlin officials and compromised the companies who paid the bribes. More importantly, the informant, William Douglas Campbell, learned from Mikurin and others that Russian nuclear officials were trying to penetrate the inner circles of Bill and Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation. Now think about what I just said, all of the information I just gave you, with respect to what's going on today. Robert Mueller, back in August of 2009, then FBI director, personally delivered a sample of uranium to the Russian government at the behest of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, which the cover story here was to, well, this was done in conjunction and with the furtherance of the Russian investigation. But I ask you, when has ever an FBI director been ordered by a Secretary of State to take highly enriched uranium to Russia to assist in their, you know, air quotes, investigation? And after that, well, really from mid-2000, and that was August 17th of 2009. So from mid-2009 through late 2010, Clinton, as Secretary of State, intervened on a number of occasions on behalf of Uranium One, Rosatom, and the inner workings of the transfer of the sale of uranium assets in her official capacity. So here she is, as Secretary of State, selling out U.S. uranium and giving our very precious asset to the Russians through this complex web of companies. She's being enriched. Pardon the pun there. She's getting money. Bill Clinton is getting money. Obama, this is all happening under the watch of Obama. And Mueller is supposedly investigating all of this, but does nothing. In fact, it's worse than does nothing. Deflects investigations away from this. Do you see how this right now? Okay, so think about what I just said in the context of today's headlines. Now you've got, let's go back to what I said earlier, how I started Nate Kane. Where does Nate Kane fit in on all this? It's sad that he did not appear on Hannity last night. It was Nate Kane and Solomon and Sarah Carter was supposed to appear, but they didn't because of the coverage. But wait, just think about this. And also know this, back in June of 2010, you know this. Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. Bill Clinton, you know that $500,000, $500,000 payout for one speech, a one-hour speech he delivered in Moscow, his first Moscow speech in 5 years. It was given at a seminar hosted by Renaissance Capital in Moscow. Well, what's Renaissance Capital? It's a Kremlin-controlled investment bank that's just filled with Russian intelligence agents having close ties to Putin. Now, many will say, wait a minute, because all this doesn't matter, because CFIUS, the group entrusted, CFIUS is an acronym for the Committee on Foreign Investments. Well, that's the government body that's entrusted with approving sales like this or approving commerce like this or deals. It was October 22nd, 2010. They approved the Rosatom Uranium One merger. Well, Hillary Clinton served as the titular head of CFIUS in her capacity as Secretary of State. Well, who are the other members? They included the Secretaries of the Treasury, State, Defense, Homeland Security, Commerce, and Energy, the Attorney General. Oh, yeah, Attorney, okay. And representatives from two White House offices. One was the United States Trade Representative, and the other the Office of Science and Technology Policy. But you know who had the final approval on all this? On the sale? You got it. Obama. The at that point, the President of the United States had the final approval of the merger and graciously allowed it to proceed. Now, William Douglas Campbell, as informant, he had direct knowledge and evidence of corruption, bribery, and other related crimes. That information was withheld from CFIUS. Do you see a pattern here? Withholding information, redirecting information. You would think that Mueller, well, what would Mueller do? Should have done. And vital information was intentionally withheld by those at the highest levels within U.S. intelligence and top judiciary positions. And finally, on December 10th, 2010, Rosatom, You can use Rosatom Russia interchangeably at this point. They completed their acquisition of Uranium One, and everyone was happy, full of cash, satisfied. The U.S. government officials, including but not limited to Clinton, her foundation, Clinton as Secretary of State, and the Clinton Foundation, enriched by this activity, Bill Clinton and others were instrumental in selling one of the most precious natural resources to foreign interest for self-enrichment. Such enrichment, by the way, is estimated to exceed $145 million in contributions from foreign entities, including and especially those represented Russia, to the Clinton Foundation, funneled through shell corporations. And this is what Mueller has been attempting to hide in his capacity as special counsel. You want to talk about Russian collusion? There's your Russian collusion. And you know how that it's stated that, they're just projecting what they do onto others? Well, there it is. And Hussein had the power to stop all this, but didn't. And, oh, yeah, Eric Holder, who was informed of the bribery and corruption related to the multiple transactions in the sale of one of our most strategic assets, did nothing as well. Eric Holder. Oh, and his successor, Loretta Lynch, did nothing as well. She failed, in fact, deliberately denied launching any investigation into foreign dealings between Bill and Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, and foreign nationals. And now we've got Mueller continuing his investigating Russian collusion between Russia and Donald Trump and campaign officials. Mueller did nothing as well. In fact, worse than that, he covered it up. That's the addition, kind of the, part two of yesterday's show as well. Kind of letting you know where, at least in my view, where things are headed. I believe one must look toward Uranium One to understand the headlines of today and the coming headlines of tomorrow. I hope that made sense. A lot of information packed into this show. Hey, if you like what you heard, please pass this information. I'll tell you what, hashtag DHRS, Doug Hagman Radio Show. Make it a thing. Tell others about this program. Put it on social networking. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great, wonderful day. Until tonight, God bless.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report. Tune in to The Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.